Hi, I'm Allison Wickline with DePaul Community Resources. DePaul is a nonprofit organization that works to change the world by improving the lives of children, families, and individuals with developmental disabilities. We do not accomplish this life-changing work alone. We cannot open doors to hope and belonging across Virginia without generous financial gifts from the community. There are many ways to give and support our mission, including planned or legacy giving. Planned gifts to DePaul's legacy program, known as the Heart and Home Society, allows members' philanthropy to continue beyond their lifetimes. Joining me to discuss planned giving are Ted Troland, an estate planning and tax lawyer, and Wayne Epperly, senior fiduciary advisor. Thank you both so much for joining me. We'll start with you, Ted. Can you tell me briefly what charitable gift planning or legacy giving or anything in that vein, what is that?
Well, those terms are sort of interchangeable, but I think it's easiest to start off with what it's not, which I understand we refer to in the trade as a major gift, which is a one-off type of gift where someone, say, gives $50 million to the National Gallery of Art during their lifetime, and that's it. It's particularly opposed to the typical charitable giving that all of us do and that we're aware of, which is out of your cash flow during the year, you give something to your alma mater or to the American Cancer Society or to DePaul, and it's when you feel that you don't have enough cash flow to make a huge gift, but you make just gifts in the normal course. Those are allow a tax deduction, which is not as useful as it once was, because we all know now the standard deduction for a married couple has gone up to, for this year, $24,800, which means there's a lot less itemizing of deductions, which is what we used to do with our current gifts. All right, you're saying what it's not, here's what it is. I think of it as a process, but planned giving is a process of a donor making a significant charitable gift during his or her lifetime or at death that is part of that person's financial or estate plan. It's broader than just the one-off gift that is made during the year or the major gift. It's part of a planning process, and that's why we call it planned giving. It takes into account your potential donor's assets, how they're structured, and depending on a lot of different factors, we would hope that the organization would be able to help lay out this plan or have a professional lay out the possible plan. Planned giving can involve a lot of different types of things. It can involve, I'm going to leave you $100,000 in my will. I can't afford to do it during my lifetime, but once both my wife and I are gone, our wills will say upon the death of the survivor that the organization will receive $100,000. That way we are able to satisfy our charitable impulses, but not endanger the ability to access our assets during lifetime. It could be in the form of a life insurance designation or the designating a charity as the beneficiary of a retirement plan or IRA. But it could also be done in a more elaborate way, a number of different devices for satisfying your charitable impulses, but also enabling you to continue to enjoy the assets that you have. And I like to use one example that when you give the title of it, it sounds kind of daunting, a charitable remainder trust, but this is a have your cake and eat it too sort of situation where you have talked to your donor and you have uncovered the fact that the donor has a lot of appreciated investments, stocks and bonds, doesn't want to sell them because they're going to have a big capital gains tax, and they know if they hang on them till death, at least under the present law, They get a step up in basis, meaning that appreciation during lifetime won't be subject to tax when their beneficiaries sell it. They'd like to make a gift now, but they really just can't afford to. They depend upon those assets. Now, what this charitable remainder trust, as this example that I'm using, allows you to do is to create a trust, have your lawyer, somebody like me, create a trust. Doesn't have to be very elaborate. It just has to meet certain guidelines set by the Internal Revenue Service. But then the donor donates those assets to the trust, but the trust provides that during the donor's lifetime or the lifetime of the donor and the donor's spouse, that there will be an annual return that will be paid out of the trust back to the donor. It could either be a percentage of the initial value when the gift is made, or more likely a percentage of the value as recomputed annually, so that the person has made a charitable contribution, has committed to making a charitable contribution, but is still going to benefit during his lifetime or her lifetime and that of the spouse, so they won't be giving up everything. Upon the death of the survivor in this example, what is in the trust will go to the charity. But the other aspect of that is that once you've committed to this, because this is an irrevocable decision, and the donor has to know that, it is irrevocable, but that means that they get a current tax deduction, and if it's a substantial gift, it can be a fairly substantial amount of the gift as determined for income tax purposes in excess of the standard deduction, so that you will actually get a tax benefit. The last feature worth mentioning of that is, well, what about the kids? Those are assets that were going to go to them. Now, this isn't as prevalent as it once was because of the standard deduction change, but when you get a tax deduction, and if the gift is substantial enough, then what people have done in the past is use the tax savings, the money that they don't have to pay an income tax because they've gotten this deduction, to buy a life insurance policy and make their children the beneficiaries of that. The ultimate result, and this is what plan giving is all about really, is that everybody's happy. The donor is happy. The donor's children are not necessarily deprived. They'll be happy. And of course, the organization knows that somewhere down the road, they're going to get a substantial donation.
And what do you think is most important when we're talking about charitable gift planning and, you know, planned giving? What do you think is most important for people to understand about it and about the process?
Well, it's sort of what I was alluding to here, but it is that once you've identified someone as a potential donor, or it's a current donor who would like to make more substantial gifts, that you can explain to them that make them understand that this substantial gift can be made without endangering their financial welfare. Not necessarily something as elaborate as a charitable remainder trust, but just having them commit to a post-death transfer from their estate to the organization, that it can be relatively painless.
So it does require some planning and some effort, but it wouldn't be too difficult for anyone to do if they wanted.
It would not be, and it's not very difficult for them to understand.
Okay. So why would you encourage someone to at least consider planned giving?
In my case, as an estate planner, I would do it when I have identified the fact that my client is a person who has charitable instincts and wants to, usually in concert with the spouse, to make a substantial gift, but can't really necessarily afford to do it in the style or in the amount to which they would like at this point, but to make sure they understand that they can satisfy their charitable impulses, make the charity very happy, and yet not sacrifice a great deal.
So Wayne, why would you encourage someone to consider planned giving?
Well, I think first and foremost, the clients that we typically work with, you find that those clients do have an interest in a favorite, a charity that they've supported or one that they have passion around. So what we look at is, Ted mentioned, he said, it is planned. It's called planned giving. So it's part of your overall estate plan. So what we see is we have clients that for years and years and years will support either one or more selected charities. And then what we do is work with them to say, how do you really, put that into a memorialize that or put it into a perpetual type basis. And then we just really get down into the true plan, doing the plan part of that, making it, like Ted said, that plan giving aspect of their estate plan.
Wayne, this last one is for you. If I am interested, let's say I listen to this recording or I hear about plan giving, if I'm interested in the idea of it, where do I start? How does this process work? And what are my options? What do I need to know just getting started?
Well, I'm going to answer that really in two parts. First is one of the things that we're really encouraging. You take what's taking place today with COVID. It's causing a lot of people to come back and look at their entire financial and estate plan. So, for those folks, what we really say is let's go first and foremost and make sure that you have the correct plan in place that's not going to protect you and your loved ones during your lifetime. And also from a legacy standpoint, how does that play into your long-term plan giving? And then what we do is we actually encourage clients to actually go down and look at each and every one of their individual asset holdings, because it can be done in a fairly simple basis. Ted mentioned like the charitable remainder trust, but we run into clients, for example, that high net worth clients that we tell them, an IRA, you can simply change the beneficiary designation on an IRA. If you have a life insurance policy you've held for years, and now you want that to be part of your, your legacy planning, you can go in and do a simple beneficiary designation. So for us, the process and really, getting started and how does the process work, it really goes to each and every client, individual client's needs and objectives. If a client wants to, has a specific asset that they've already earmarked and they just want to make sure that that ends up going as a planned gift, that can be fairly simple. And then we can also, but like I said, what we're really encouraging clients today is to take a comprehensive look at their estate plan and their financial plan, and then how does the plan giving part of that play into that?
Is there anything else that you guys would like to add before we wrap up?
Only in the sense that it's not just what we do with the client, that what do you say, where do I start? It's also where does the organization start that has to be considered. And I suggest that the people with the organization, such as yourself, begin to familiarize yourself with some of the different things that you can do in the planned giving area that can be made attractive to your existing donors and potential donors.
Yeah, and Ted, I agree with that. Allison, I guess in the past, if you look at a private foundation, a lot of them will have a spending policy is anywhere probably to 3.5% to 5% per year. So I know what I've seen other organizations do is if they look at a donor today that's been giving for 10 years and they can say, hey, if you've been giving, whatever level you're giving at, and you basically back into that saying you can actually make a plan gift that would allow to continue you supporting the organization on a perpetual basis through your plan and estate planning gifts.
Well, thank you all so much for joining me and providing this important information. I hope that people are able to listen to this and at least get a nice introduction to planned giving. If anyone is listening and is interested in learning more about planned giving at DePaul, you can visit depaulcr.org/legacy to learn more.